Introducing Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB, AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Friday morning together with you and our listening audience out there in the world. And we've got sunshine here shining in right now.
Yeah, Vancouver had 4 months of no rain, but I think we made up for it in 1 week.
It sure came down. Yep.
We have a listener question from Gavin. Could Bob explain how short-dated rates rise at the end of a great speculation? If demand goes up to borrow short, would that not drive down the rate of interest? Thanks, Gavin.
Yeah, well, Gavin, thanks for your question. You got about half of it right. Short rates, such as Treasury bills, and we want to stay in the senior economy, which is the U.S., so Treasury bills, the 6 month bill rate has soared from next to nothing a couple of years ago to, it's about 5.5% now. It's essentially straight up. But if you look back on the charts, short-dated interest rates such as T-bills always go up in a boom because there is increasing demand for short-term funds. And it's interesting that while the Fed is always on the easy side, it can never ease enough to prevent the rise in interest rates. So here we are, they're straight up getting extremely overbought, and we are in financial volatility that is saying that the great financial bubble is over, and in which case, somewhere soon, like a month or so, that T-bill rates, either the 3 month or the 6 month, should turn down. And then a month or so later, the Fed would follow. It's worthwhile getting across that the Fed does not create interest rate policy changes. The Fed follows what's going on in market rates of interest. And the T-bill rate, hey, it's being traded all of the time, 24 hours a day. And then what you have with the Federal Reserve is that we can call it the Fed funds that used to be the discount rate, but let's call it the administered rate. So in order to look like it's in charge when short rates are going up, it has to raise its interest rates. And so then also there's a whole lot of complexity out there. You can have the T-bill rate heading down once it turns, but that doesn't mean that long-dated interest rates, for example, for junk, are going to turn down. No, we're past the great mania for junk bonds, which got down to an unusually low yield a year or so ago, and yields for junk have been rising as prices have been falling. So the post-bubble contraction offers all kinds of complexities in interest rates, and thanks for the question.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Some of the headlines that caught Bob's attention today. Headline, inflation protests across Europe threaten political turmoil.
Oh, yeah, that is political turmoil. I mean, the establishment can't stand the no. But let's look at it. The extreme conditions with energy shortages and price rises is not just Russia. It was the policymakers in Northern Europe that got on the CO2 global warming nonsense and went to windmills and solar cells and shut down coal-generated electricity and shut down nuclear power. And the distinction between the two is very obvious, and it always has been, is that with a coal plant or a nuclear plant, it's on all the time. Whereas with windmills and solar, it's not on all the time, and that then presents a problem. So one of the issues that practical people have pointed out is that when you set up a new capacity in either windmills or solar, you got to have the equivalent as backup of power that's going to be there. And what power is going to be there when you need it? Coal, oil, gas, and nuclear. So the policymakers, in a fit of madness, canceled all of those. And then that was one blunder. Then the other blunder was to get hooked up with Russia for whatever supplies of oil and gas that were needed. And in the 1980s, when Ronald Reagan was president, he a number of times warned Northern Europeans about becoming reliant on Russian supplies. So you have two levels of stupidity there, and you've seen sharp rises in, well, readily available, you know, natural gas prices in Europe and in England. And but even rare charts, like I stumbled on one a while ago, was the cost of firewood in Germany. There was somebody put together a chart going back to about 05, so it was flat lying, but with the seasonal swings in it from summer to winter. And then all of a sudden, boom, straight up. So even scrounging for firewood has become very expensive. So, but I wish the people in Northern Europe and England well as they go through perhaps what could be a nasty winter. And in Canada, of course, the prices are going to be, could be severe as well, because the Canada's federal government hates oil and gas and have been doing whatever they can to shut it down. And then also the recent Ottawa federal hatred is for nitrogen, which farmers have to replace each year in many crops. One of the key things that are taken out of the soil have been nitrogen. So one of the things they learned, back in almost the Roman times, is that you have to rotate crops in order to enhance the production. And so now farmers today are very thrifty in the application of nitrogen. I mean, it virtually goes in with the seed. So Trudeau is off on one of his control things, and the sooner he is forced out of office, the better. And the headline is pertinent.
Some other headlines that caught your attention, and I think it's all connected. Chinese markets tumble as Xi's tightening grip alarms investors. Xi's power grab spurs historic market rout as foreigners flee. And China home prices fall for the 13th straight month as property woes persist. Does it sound like the Chinese bamboo curtain is starting to crumble?
Good one. Yeah, the interesting part is the president, Xi, is trying to get total control. And with that, the demands by the government in Beijing for money will continue. But all of the prosperity is in the southern provinces, and it's getting very painful there. And I don't see that with a communist reducing their demand for money, and this could eventually prompt quite a showdown between the consuming communists and the producing ordinary folk in the southern provinces. So there could be a massive no from ordinary folk, and it could be the start of the collapse of communism in China, which would certainly be a very good thing.
Now, of course, we know despots in desperate times like to spark wars to take their populace's minds off a poor economy. I'm thinking of Argentina's invasion of the Falklands when they had 100% inflation. And so they started a war for no reason then to take the population's mind off their poverty. Could the same thing be happening with China taking a look at Taiwan? And I think Taiwan has already threatened, we'll blow up our computer chip factories if you start to invade.
Oh, I hadn't seen that one, Jim. Yeah. That's an interesting point. No, I think China's bluffing on that, and it's like the communists are going to run out of money, and you have to have real money to prosecute, you know, wars and, you know, external manipulations and stuff like that. So, no, I think on the next phase of the contraction, governments in Russia, for example, and China are going to discover that, hey, there's no money for adventures, and or let's should we say misadventure. And the threat will diminish. So, and in Russia, for example, with the dreadful mistake of invading Ukraine, there's opposition developing at all levels of society in Russia at home. So, I think the next leg down in this post-bubble contraction, where many governments will be running out of money, the most belligerent will then no longer be able to afford their belligerence. So that'll change there.
Yeah, you know, military stuff isn't cheap. An artillery shell, $50,000. Uh-huh. You know, a cruise missile is well over $1 million.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's not cheap. Yeah.
Headline, U.S. home prices cool at record pace in August.
Yep. A major downtick in U.S. home prices. Yep. And this could be extensive because we, particularly in Canada, which, of course, is getting the same hit, whereby I remember in 1980 with that boom in commodities and house prices in Vancouver, and once the boom ended, and then the house prices turned down very quickly. And up in British properties, which is upper-scale stuff, the prices fell to one-third of the high, whereas sort of in ordinary but nice neighborhoods like Carisdale, they fell in half. But then you had the hit to the financial markets in 08, and there was a minor downtick in house prices in Vancouver, but in Toronto, they kept going up. So there was something very unique going on, and that was the strength of the Asian bid. Whereas after the house bubble peak in 06 in the United States, their real estate took a mighty whack, because whatever the Asian bid that was there wasn't big enough to offset it. But in Canada, the Asian bid was big enough to offset any serious decline in home prices. But now with the Chinese property market so severely hit, there's going to be no Asian bid to support the downtick that's already started in house prices in Canada. And by that, I mean, hey, the two leading, Vancouver and Toronto. So it's going to be interesting.
Headline, U.S. business activity contracts for fourth month, orders shrink.
Yeah. Things are slowing down, although this week they came out with a plus 2.6% GDP number. And there were some analysis on it, and there were government expenditures and inflation calculations, so it wasn't quite as robust as one would think. And then the other one is just an offhand guess, is that perhaps with the COVID panic being eased, more and more people are kind of like going to work and doing things and getting out and buying. So, but maybe that's already in the market. And at the moment, we're in the stock market thing. We're just sort of in the favorable time from October to May. But we don't think we're going to get any huge rallies out there. It'll just sort of ups and downs. One day the street will have a reason to go risk on, which is where we are now. And then a few weeks later, they'll go risk off. So it'll be choppy market. But the main thing is to understand is that the great bull market is over.
Also, too, with a technical GDP increase in the last month, that means the U.S. isn't technically in a recession, but ask consumers, are you or not? It seems that people forget
well,
to ask Joe Average.
One definition of recession was two quarters of negative GDP growth, and we had that in the first half of the year.
Yeah.
Then we've had a pop-up, no question about it, and but the rest is yet to come. We are basically within a post-bubble contraction where the bubble completed, the financial bubble in stocks completed in January and has been in a bear market. And after dithering around for the next month or so, then probably it'll roll over and to new lows. And then that will really get the economists going because, as they have, as the S&P is a leading indicator in the, for the economy. So we'll see.
Well, my take on it is, in the U.S., Americans spend the most money on Christmas, the holiday that they spend the next biggest amount of money on is Halloween. So yeah. I think the economy popped because everybody was running out buying a Halloween costume.
No, Jim. I saw one that shipments of Halloween paraphernalia from Asia were much diminished, but I can't tell you any numbers. I can't tell you where I saw it and whatnot, but that has been lurking around in my head. So.
Well, remember the giant container ship that got stuck in the Suez Canal caused a shortage of garden gnomes and sex toys in Europe. So
I didn't see that. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to get big super container ships stuck.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us and have a great Halloween.
Yeah, you too, Jim. I'm going over to my daughter's and the two grandsons and we'll help out on Halloween evening and I will enjoy it. So, okay.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. You can send questions to Bob by going to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at Howe Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.